We're holding on. You'd press Omid Bey's second line from the bottom. We left off in the middle of a discussion like this. We started with the question. We know that the master of an Omohavriya is able to do yield. The pasuk says, "Ashaloy yoda," that is Kriyuk Siva, where they're actually it's written loy with an aleph. It's read loy with a vav. But anyway, it means that he has the so Ashaloy yoda would mean that he does yield, that he decides that she should be his wife, and then so he's Mekadesh her and makes her his wife. So now she's no longer an Oma. The Siv with an aleph would be Ashaloy yoda. If he does not want to do that, then as the pasuk continues, Vehefta, then he has to help with getting her freed from her status as an Oma Havriya by accepting less money for her, etc., as we talked about a few days ago. Anyway, so now we were in the middle of discussing the question, if he does yield, does that accomplish only Erusin, or does that accomplish the equivalent of Nisuin as well? So we were talking about so we were talking about that. The last thing we were talking about was you have a case, it says in a Braisa, that it's possible for the father to sell his daughter as an Omohavriya when she's already an almana, when she's already a widow, and he'd still be allowed to sell her to a Kohen Gadol, even though the Kohen Gadol was not allowed to marry her, because if he were to marry her, Kiddushin would be Tofus, because it's only an Issur Lav. So we have to figure out, how does it happen that she would be an almana and still be under the jurisdiction of her father, that he'd be able to sell her? All this time, we're trying to work out within Rabbi Akiva's opinion, because we had before a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. We said Piras, once the Rabbi Akiva had said, once Piras Talisei Aleha, once she was already once yud had already been done, then the father wouldn't be able to sell her in the future. So we said, though, that we could make it work maybe according to Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda, we're going to be discussing now in the Gemara, holds, at least according to one way of understanding him, that the yield is not accomplished using the money that the Odin paid for her in the first place, in which case we could say that the father did a kiddushin of his daughter in the usual way, just that in this case it's kind of deferred to begin with. It's done as to sell her as an omohavriya, but that money is also sort of an escrow waiting until it can be used for kiddushin. If we said that, then in fact, if we then in fact it would be impossible for him to sell her again later on once that yield has been done. But if we'd say, like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, that it's not being done based on it's not being done based on the money. It's just being done based on the fact she's his Alma Hevriya, therefore he has the ability to do yield, then the father is not really involved. So therefore we could say the father has not been the one who accepted Kedushin on her behalf. Therefore he'd still have, if now the Odin does yield and then dies, then she's, there you go, she's an almana, but she's still a katana, and therefore she'd still be under her father's jurisdiction, and he'd be able to resell her as an omohavriya to somebody else. But we said, if that all assumes that the yield only accomplishes erusin, on the face of it, if it accomplishes nisuin, then that's not possible. In general, once a girl has gone through nisuin, she's out of her father's rishus. But we ended up saying, we wanted to say that maybe not. The same way as you could distinguish between Erusin that she did on her own versus Erusin that her father did on her behalf, maybe the same thing is true as far as Nisuin. There would be a difference whether her father gave her over for Nisuin, her father gave her away in marriage to a chosen who did Nisuin with her, versus where she's doing it on her own. So you could argue, if we say that the yield is not accomplished using the money that she was sold for in the first place, in which case basically it's something being done all on her own, then even if it accomplishes Nisuin, maybe that's not enough to take her out of her father's jurisdiction. So that's where we're holding. The Gemara says, "Hi, my, what kind of an argument is that? What kind of a comparison is that? B'shleima erusin me'erusin shiny." It's one thing. Yes, you can say that one kind of erusin is different than another. Yes, you can talk about if the father did erusin for his daughter, namely accepted the kesef kiddushin or whatever the method of erusin was, you could distinguish between whether he did it or whether she did it on her own. Ellen Nisuin when Nisuin Mishani. How can Nisuin possibly be different than other Nisuin? The fact is, Nisuin takes her out of her father's rishus. And Rashi points out Nisuin are daraisa. So they take her completely out of her father's rishus. Well, it's daraisa, although it's interesting what Rashi means by that. I mean, Kiddushin is also daraisa, but anyway, the point is that apparently what Rashi means is it's one thing when within Kiddushin we can distinguish between sometimes we have a Kiddushin that has the force of something daraisa, namely when her father does it for her, versus where it doesn't have as much force, namely where she does it for herself as a katana, as opposed to Nisuin is Nisuin. There should be no difference. It takes her out of her father's rishus, and that's that. So we do have then a good proof. So therefore, it seems that therefore we have to say that Yud would accomplish only Kiddushin, even within that, we would have to say it would work only according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, because according to the Chachamim, if we said according to the Chachamim that the yield is accomplished using the original money that was received for her, then according to Rabbi Akiva, and the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, that you can't sell your daughter l'shifchus achar ishus, then there's nothing to talk about selling her as an almana anyway. So the Gemara says, now what about according to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's understanding of Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda, he says that even Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda would say, further on in the Gemara, we're going to discuss Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda and the Chachamim, and we're going to have two different ways of understanding his opinion of which one is so far we've been talking about one understanding of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, which is the stump of the Gemara's understanding that he holds the yud is not accomplished through money but just through the fact that she's his shifta and he has the right to do yud. But then we have further on Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok says no, even Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's accomplished through the money. So then, b'may mukim law, so how is he going to understand that scenario where the daughter is already an almana and the father yet has the right to sell her as an omah hevriya and was saying he could conceivably sell her to a kohen gadol? Now the question is, in other words, if we go according to Rabbi Akiva, there'd be no way to make that scenario work because Rabbi Akiva says that you can't sell the shifchos achar ishus. So the Gemara answer is necessarily mukim lachir abul yezer dom l'shivchos achas shivchos hu d'lematzi mazbin la. Necessarily, then Rav Nachman Yitzchok is going to have to say that that braisa goes only like Rabbi Eliezer, who says that he can't sell her for shivchos as an amah hevriya a second time after he already sold her the first time as an amah hevriya. Av l'shivchos achas ishus matzi mazbin la, but he could sell her as a shivcha as an amah hevriya after issues. So therefore, see, you don't have to have, according to him, you don't have to have all these elaborate scenarios. You could just have a plain way. Yield was done. Then the master dies. Erosin has been, only Erosin has been accomplished. And now that's only Shifchos Achar Ishus. And therefore he's able to, you don't even need that, actually. You don't even need that she was sold the first time. Just the father accepted Kedushin on her behalf the regular way. Without her being an Amah Hevriya, then her chosen died. So now she's an Amana, but now Shifchos Achar Ishus, Rabbi Eliezer holds, you're allowed to do. So therefore he'd be able, therefore you have that scenario that he'd be able to sell her. So as an Amah Hevriya. Now Rashi explains, up until now, we didn't want to have to do that, given that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Eliezer, because Rashi points out Rabbi Eliezer is Shamusi, who, as we talked about the other day, where Shamusi means either he's a Talmud or Bishamai, or it means that he was placed in Nidui. So most of the time, the halacha is not like him. So till now, we've been trying to make the Braisa work according to Rabbi Akiva. Now, according to Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok, we're saying we really don't have a choice. He has to necessarily say that it goes only according to Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. then Tosfos learns the other way around. Tosfos said, we discussed yesterday briefly, that Tosfos holds that the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva may have to be flipped around because of various considerations. So we would say the other way around, that the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Shimon agree with Rabbi Eliezer because they use his drasha of Bevig Deva, and they use that to say what the halacha is as far as Shifchus Achar Ishus. Rabbi Shimon, we said, agrees with both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. So then Tosfos says, until now we were trying to make it work according to Rabbi Eliezer, since the Chachamim exclusively go according to him. Now we're saying maybe Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak has no choice but to make this Braisa go according to Rabbi Akiva and to go according to both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, meaning, in other words, according to Rabbi Shimon. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, Boy Rish Lakish. Now let's talk more about this matter of Yud. We know that the Odin can do Yud for himself. He can decide that this Amma Hevriya is to be his wife. And we can also have, the Pasuk mentions, V'im Livno Yodena, that he could also have it be Yud for his son. So, Boy Rish Lakish, Maush Miyad Odom Livno Katan. Can he do Yud for his son when his son is still a Katan? Do we say Bnoi Omer Achmana, Bnoi Kolderhu? The Pasuk says V'im Livnoi Yodena, so maybe that would mean no matter what age the son is, so even if the son is a cotton, then the father can still do it. Or maybe the point is that the Bnoi has to be similar in a certain way to him, in the sense Mahu Godol Af Bnoi Godol, maybe the same way as he has to be a Godol. So maybe the Odin himself is a Godol. Maybe the son has to be a Godol as well. Now the point is, in other words, usually we have, you know, when it comes to a Ktana, we have the concept of Kiddushin for her, which the Chachamim made. Maybe this is also when Rashi said before that Nisuin Adaraisa, implying that Kiddushin or not. Yeah, because we're talking about a Ktana over here. The concept that a father can be Makadosh his daughter is Daraisa, actually, as Biti Nasati Lo Ishazeh, that a Ktana can be married when her father is not around, then that's Dirabanan. Anyway, the point is that it's one thing with a Ktana, we have the concept of her getting married, but with a Katan, we don't really have that concept. So maybe when it comes to you, then also that doesn't work. Or maybe over here, the fact is, the Torah says, Livno Yodena, so maybe specifically over here, it would work even if he's a cotton. So the Gemara says, Amar Abzeira Toshma, let's prove from the following case, from the following Braisa. The Pasuk says that that adultery, having relations with an Eishes Ish, is Chayiv Nisa, and the Pasuk phrases it, the Isha Sheyinafes Eishes Ish, if a man commits Niyuf with the wife of an Ish, he does niyuf with the wife of his fellow man. Then there's misa. So now, when the pasuk says ashes ish, what does that mean? Ish prat lakotan. When it says ish asher yinafes ashes ish. So there's two ishes over there. So the first ish means prat lakotan, means as opposed to a cotton. That if a cotton commits adultery, he's not chayiv misa. Which Tosfos says, the fact is, she becomes also to her husband if she's, and she would even be put to death for it. If the boy is 9 years old or over, then his bia is considered bia in halacha. So therefore, he would cause that she would be chayiv misa. So therefore, you would think that maybe in this particular case, maybe he would be chayiv misa as well. And therefore, the braisa needs to tell us based on the pasuk that nevertheless he's still below age and therefore he's not chayiv misa. And when it continues, Asher Yinafas Eishes Ish, that he commits Niyuf with the wife of an Ish. So again, the second Ish means Prapla Eishes Cotton, as opposed to the wife of a cotton. So again, in other words, if somebody committed adultery with the wife of a cotton, then there wouldn't be Misa involved because her husband is only a cotton. She might be also to him, but she wouldn't be, and the boyo wouldn't be Chayiv Misa. So now the Iamet Miyad. So if you say now that the father is able to do yud for his son, then Mimken Matsinu Ishus the cotton, then you find on a Daraisa level that there can be that a cotton has a marriage. So then in that case, why shouldn't therefore there should be Missa involved. Therefore, shouldn't that tell us that no, you can't do yiyud for your son when he's a katan, because otherwise it would be a full fledged marriage daraisa. And why shouldn't there be Missa if there was niyuf over there? So the Gemara answers back the Elamai Einim Yaid. So what are you going to tell me then, that the Odin cannot do yiyud? Amai Kamamai Lekra. Well, then, on the contrary, you would have to ask, why would the pasuk have to be excluding something that doesn't exist? On the contrary, tifshit mina d'miyayid, shouldn't you be able to learn from that there could be yiyud? So you would say in other words, there could be yiyud for a katan, and there is a full-fledged marriage here, daraisa, and nevertheless, the Torah is telling us a miyut that misa doesn't apply if afterwards she commits niyuf with somebody else. So shouldn't that prove, on the contrary, that yiyud would work for a katan? So Ravashi answers not necessarily, because you could say Hocha, here's another example where cotton could have issues. Hocha be yovam benteisha shanim yem echad haba yavim tayaskinim. We could be talking about where it's a matter of yibum, and the boy, the yovam, is at least 9 years old. D'midaraisa chazile. We're there at that point again, given that at 9 years old already, his bia is considered a bia. So therefore, if he does bia with her at that point from 9 years old, then he is koina her as a yavam to his yavam. So there you have a case where you have issues for a cotton. You don't need to say by yud specifically you have it. You could say you have it by yib. You could say you have it by yibum. Maybe in fact by yud it wouldn't work unless the boy is already by mitzvah. Now Rashi explains that that the 9 year old would be koina her completely for all purposes. Tosfos points out that no, we learned in Yevamos that actually that's really only midrabanan. As far as things like yashining her and other things like that, she wouldn't be considered ishtoi. Still though, Tosfos says, so what the Gemara means, so Rashi is saying midaraisa chazulei in the sense that once he's nine, then the yibum is considered a complete yibum. Tosfos says no, what it really means is that given that all you need for yibum is bia, the fact is midaraisa chazulei in the sense that she is ready for yibum to him no matter what, when he's a gadol. When we're talking over here about a cotton, the fact is that, as we said before, if he does niyuf with an eshes ish, with an eshes gadol, then she would be chayiv misa and he would be potter, and the same thing with other arayas. So you would think then that the same thing applies to yibum. So you would think hoyo midaraisa chazya that in other words, we would understand the hoyo that we would think the kibin de midaraisa chazyale would mean that maybe we would think she's considered full fledged as wife, and no, we're saying it's only drabban. So anyway, so going back to the Gemara, that's the point. Mao de tema, you would think, kibin de midaraisa chazyale, since midaraisa she is suitable for him, will be ose bia, and he's nine, so therefore his bia is a valid bia. Habolem is chayeb eishas ish. Then later on, if somebody were to have relations with this yavama, then he would be chayeb, and she would be chayeb as an eishas ish. From Ash Milan, therefore the pasuk is telling us from Asher Yunafas eishas ish that no, because the fact is a cotton. So again, according to Rashi, they are fully married. However, the Torah is making an exception for this one thing of niyuf, and according to Tosfos, the Torah is telling us that to begin with, they're not really considered married because the whole concept that a yavam has relations with the yavama and is koina her if he's nine is only midrabam. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so you don't have a proof one way or the other from that, because yes, the Torah is being mamaya, it's a case of an eshes cotton, but not necessarily is that a case where there's yiud with a cotton, because we could be talking about a case where there's yibum with a cotton. Okay, so the Gemara says mai havi Allah. Fine. So what's the bottom line? Can you do yiud for your minor son or not? So the Gemara says Toshma, Omer of Aivu, Omer of Yani. any yud ela begadol, yud can take place only with a gadol, any yud ela midas, and yud can take place only with the das. It has to be with consent and with understanding. So Gemara asks Tauti, why do you need to say both of those things automatically? If you say that it has to be a cotton doesn't have das, so therefore automatically. Yes, of course. If all you have to say is you don't have that it requires das, and automatically we'll know therefore that it can't be a cotton because a cotton doesn't have das. That's how Rashi understands it. In fact, Rashi adds the point also that in effect, what you're doing is when your father is doing yud for you, then in effect you're making him a shliach to be mekadosh for you. Well, a cotton can't make a shliach. Tosfos explains differently that no, what it means is the tauti means the two things seem to contradict each other. Ein yud ela begadol implies it'll work with a gadol no matter what, whether with das or not. But then we're saying ein yud ela midas, implying that not. So what is it? Do you require das or not? So the Gemara answers matam kamar. The Braisa is not really Reb Ivo, rather is not saying two reasons. He's saying one thing and explaining why matam ein yud ela begadol lefish ein yud ela midas, because it requires das and a cotton has no das, therefore, cotton can't do it. What it means, by the way, we say, of course, throughout Shas that a cotton has no das. What does that mean exactly? I mean, a cotton can be smart and understand what's going on. There is an explanation. The Rebbe Rashab actually gives an explanation, I think, in Kuntres HaTfila, that says that that das primarily means the ability to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and to empathize with them. So a cotton doesn't really have that ability yet. He really only starts developing that ability when he's by mitzvah or guru bas mitzvah. Some people, unfortunately, don't develop that even later in life, but at least the minimum that a person needs to be in order to develop that kind of sensitivity is bar bas mitzvah. Anyway, so we can say, therefore, that yes, we're saying it's not two separate statements, not two separate dinim according to Rashi, or two things that contradict one another according to Tosfos. It means that the reason why yud doesn't work for a cotton is because he lacks das. So that answers Rosh Lakish's question. So note, the father cannot do yud for his son when he's a cotton. The Iboyesema, or another possibility, you could say, in fact, Reb Ivu is saying two different things, but you could say, my midas, midas dida. The word midas over here means it requires her das. In other words, in other words, two things. Ein yud ela begadol would mean that the one who's doing yud, the man who's doing yud himself, has to be a gadol. And in addition, ein yud ela midas would mean that she has to agree to it as well. That she has to be that she's going to become his wife. Tosfos actually discusses earlier in the Masechta, Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger, refers to it over here, that maybe Midaita, I mean, to begin with, the father sells her Bar Kocha. He doesn't need his daughter's permission to sell her as an Amo Hevriya. When we're saying over here, Midaita doesn't necessarily mean that she has to agree to it, Tosfos says. It may mean actually just that he has to inform her that he's doing it L'Shem Kiddushin, that now that you're my Oma Ivriya, you've been working for me for the past however many years, now I want to change that and I want to make you my wife, I want to inform you about that. But not necessarily, Tosfos says, does it actually require her das in the sense that she has to agree with it. Anyway, whatever the case, the point is, the Braisa, when it says midas, may mean that it requires her das. The Tani Abaya Breder of Abohu, on the side over here, it says instead of Abaya, it should be Avimi. We find in a number of places in Shas that the Rav Abohu had a son named Avimi. Anyway, he says, Asher lo yoda, the Pasuk says that he is miyayed her for himself. The word yield basically means to designate. It's actually from the same Shurdish as Moyed, which is like a designated time for Hashem and us to meet up, so to speak. It's also why the Mishkan is called Oyel Moyed. So Yud means Shetzorich Legada. He has to inform her that he's going to marry her. So Rashi also points out that the word is Yoda is also, we're learning it as Miloshin Deya. It's we take the letters Yud Ayin Dalid, and from that we can make the Shodesh, Deya, da, which means to know. So therefore, it means that he has to make her know that he's going to marry her. So who Tony Loss, Abaya or Avimi taught that brisa, v'hu Amarlah, and he also explained what it means is the kedusha yield that we're talking over here about when he does yield, where he's saying, in other words, that. Meaning, in other words, the point is when a father is Makadosh his daughter, when he accepts Kedushin on behalf of his daughter, he doesn't have to inform her. He can do it. I mean, he eventually she has to know about it, but he doesn't have to check with her first. He can do it Baal Korcha if he wants. But here we're saying, when it says Malamach Tzarech Liyada, he's saying the Kedusha Yud that we're talking about, when we're talking about specifically by Yud, Val Liba de Rab Yosi Beb Yehuda, Dama Moris Harishonis Lav Kedushin Nitnu, and following the opinion of Rab Yosi Beb Yehuda that we mentioned earlier, that said that the original money was not given as kiddushin, meaning, in other words, Rashi had said, if we said Moshe Rishonis likiddushin nitnu, then it would have meant that no matter what, even at the last moment when she's in Amah Hevriya, it would be possible to do yield. But since Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda is going to say soon, we're going to bring that you have to do yield before her time of as an Omer Hevriya is up. So therefore, that implies that he says that it's not that the original money was given for yield, and therefore you can do yield based on that, but rather that you're doing yield based on the fact that she's still serving as an Omer Hevriya. Because in other words, the point is, if Moshe Rishonis the kedushin nitnu, then it would mean, in other words, the father in effect did a deferred kedushin. He received money, and he said eventually, sometime during the time that you're having her as an Amah Hevriya, then you can decide at any time that those kedushin should be activated, and you're going to marry her. So therefore, that would mean that the father was the one who received kedushin on her behalf. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying that. The money was not given for kedushin, so here the father is not in the picture anymore to decide whether yield should be done. You have to inform her, and you have to get her consent or some kind of consent that she should agree to go through with this. So that would mean what we mean in yield elamidas. Now, what about Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Afilu Tamei LeKedushin Nitnu? Now, we said before, Rav Nachman Yitzchak understands Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda differently, and says that no, the original money was given for kedushin, meaning that in other words, that in effect, to begin with, the kedushin is being based on the fact that the father received money, and now he's deciding that kedushin should take place. So all he did is he left it up to the odin to decide when to activate that. So then he would say shiny hocha to Amar Rachmana Yoda. He would say fine, but still the brisa, he's not disagreeing with the brisa. He's saying that specifically you have the din by yield because it says the expression yoda, which again is related to the word yodia. So therefore, yes, it was originally accomplished using the money that was given for her sale. Nevertheless, though, we're saying that he still has to inform her, and he has to get her to buy. He has to get her to agree to this before he goes ahead and makes her his wife. So even though, in other words, Rav Nachman Yitzchak would say that normally when it comes to kedushin, that's not necessary. It's just the father accepts kedushin on her behalf, and then she has to follow through with it, whether she likes it or not. But here it would actually be because the Torah uses the word yoda, then we would say not so, and she has to actually agree to it. Okay, the Gemara says, my Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, what statement of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda are we talking about that we're learning within that, that we're discussing within that? How exactly, what is the logical mechanism behind yud? So like this, Netanya, your order of a hefta, the posuk says, it mentions the concept of yield, and right after it, it mentions the hefta. The expression in the posuk is, asha lo your order, that he does not do yield, the hefta, then he has to enable her to go free, to be redeemed, as we learned a few days ago, gira and kesef, that he has to deduct the amount of time that she worked for him so far, and deduct that from the amount that he's going to demand for her release. So, but that heckish between your order and hefta means tzorich shiyeh shohus bayyim k'day p'diyah. It means that when yud is done, it has to be that there's still the amount of time left in the day to do padiya, to redeem her. There's still something of the, in other words, what happens? It's already the 6 years are almost up. It has to be that there would be at least a pruta left of the amount that she was sold for. So if she was sold, let's say, so she was sold for some amount of money, we would have to calculate, we'd have to prorate that amount of money over the 6 years, and then we would have to see, well, is there, when we calculate, how much we might find, let's say, that we might find that every hour of her time was sold for a pruta. Well, then in that case, if there's less than an hour left before the 6 years are up, then he's not going to be able to do, then he's not going to be able to do yield, because then you don't have a pruta left to do giroin. So Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying, "Im yeshos b'yom kedei lasis imo shava pruta." If there's enough time in the day left that she could do work that's worth at least a shava pruta, and therefore that you'd be paying at least a pruta for her freedom, mekudeshes. Then she can be mekudeshes. V'im lav ein mekudeshes. And if not, then not. Because in other words, that. Because then you then so in other words, what we're saying is that then you don't have. You don't have a shava pruta for kedushin, so therefore it comes out on the face of it, alma kasava moisa rishonis lav the kedushin nitnu. So evidently, therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds it's not that the original money was given for kedushin. If it was, then he wouldn't be making that distinction of whether there's a pruta's worth of time left or not, because regardless, the kedushin money was given to begin with. It would be the equivalent, the same way, for example, as let's say a man could say to a woman, "Here is your money for kedushin, and the kedushin will take effect in only 30 days from now," and that works. So the same way, we would say that that the father, in effect, would be saying, "I'm accepting kedushin money for her, and any time during the next 6 years that you decide to activate it, then you can do that." The fact that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is not saying that he's saying you actually have to have shohus bayom, you have to have enough time in the day, implies that he's saying the kedushin is not taking place on the basis of that mois harishonis. It's just taking place on the basis of the fact that she's still working for him as an omah evriya, and therefore that once there's not a pruta left of worth of her time, then he can't be mekadesh her anymore. So that would show, therefore, that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda holds that the yud is not being accomplished through the father, but rather as an independent thing, as though essentially she herself is voluntarily agreeing to be niskadish. And then Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak Amar, "Fivatem l'kedushin nitnu." No, you could say even the original money was given for kedushin, but you could say shayni hochad amakrav hefta. Here it's different because the pasuk uses this expression behefta, that there has to be enough to be poyed to her at the end. So yes, you could say the kedushin to begin with was done when she was sold, and it was meant to be a deferred kedushin. But there would be a gzeris hakasim over here that there still needs to be a that there still needs to be a pruta left. So you have two different ways of understanding Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, whether we say moisa rishonis the kedushin nitnu or not. So again, if we say, so either way, the point is we have a braisa that says it requires, the yud requires her das. And we could learn it either way. We could say that it means that the yud is not being accomplished using the original money. So therefore, in effect, it's as though she is just agreeing on her own to be niskadish. So then certainly we need her das for that. But even if we say that, that it is done based on the original money, nevertheless, we're still saying because the Torah used the word yoda, which is related to the word yoda, then therefore you need her consent to it as well. More on this topic of what Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says. Now we're going to go kind of more back to matters of regular tradition. The last few blocks, we've been talking about matters of Omah Evriya and Eved Evri, but now we're going to talk about a din that more directly affects kedushin, and then we're going to continue talking about Yud. So Omer Rava, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Adam B'Tei Ketana, a man would be able to say to his young daughter when she's below Bas Mitzvah, a man would be able to say to his young daughter, "Se'iv kabli kiddushayich, you go out and you receive your kedushin money." Now she's a ketana; she doesn't have a yad; she doesn't have usually the ability to acquire anything on her own. But in this case, it would work midrab Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. It would work based on what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying. That lav omer Rabbi Yosef b'chod and Moshe Rishonis lav the kedushin nitnu. Now, didn't we say that according to the first understanding of Rabbi Yosef b'chod that the yield is not being accomplished using the original money? It's being accomplished just with the fact that she's still an omer hevriya v'chimeshaya b'shava pruta. So what happens is when she still has a shava pruta's time left to work. Havu kiddushi, then it is a valid kiddushin. In other words, therefore, we're saying, according to that way of looking at it, the father is not involved in this kiddushin at all. She's doing the kiddushin all on her own. And usually, as a ketana, that wouldn't work. But nevertheless, we're saying here it works. In effect, what she's saying is that I still have a pruta's time worth of work for you. In return for not having to do that work, I'm willing to be niskadish to you. In effect, the father is telling her to begin with, Siva Kabli Kiddushayim. The father, in effect, is telling her that you're going to go out, you're going to work as an Omer Hevriya, and eventually you'll have the option of deciding to accept Kiddushin for yourself. Hachanami Loishna, therefore, Rava says the same thing over here, where there's no situation of Omer Hevriya involved, but it's still the same kind of thing that the father could tell her, go receive this money, and once you receive it, then you will be, then you will be Niskadish. Now Tosfos discusses that after all, we learned previously on Daf Zayin, we said that if you even have a case about Revus, you can have where Reuven says to Shimon, give a money to Levi, and my daughter will be Niskadish to you, and that works as on the grounds of Orev. In other words, in effect, Reuven is making himself an Orev to Levi. So why shouldn't he be able to tell his daughter herself to go and receive her own kiddushin? What does that have to do with what we're saying with Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda over here? And Tosfos discusses because after all, he's saying that to her, and she's a ketana, and she doesn't really have a yad. But still, since we're saying that she has a yad relative to yud, so therefore we're saying it works. It works in this case as well. And Tosfos also brings in the point of das acheres maknala. If she were to find something on her own, then maybe let's say she wouldn't work for her to be koneh. But here, since her father, who is a gadol, is telling her to do it, so therefore it works, and she's able to receive that money and acquire it as kedushin, and then therefore the kedushin does work. So it works, in other words. It would work. V'omer Rava Omer Rav Nachman. Also, Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman, here's another din that we can also learn from what Rav Yosef ben Yehuda says. Hamakadish milva sheyesh aleha mashkin. If a man is makadish with a milva. Now, earlier in the perek, we talked about that, and we're going to learn later on in the Masechta as well, that you can't be Makadish b'milva itself, meaning if previously he had lent her money, and now he's saying, I want to be Makadish you with that money that you owe me, and instead of you paying me, I'll consider that as Kiddushin. It doesn't work because she's not receiving anything at the time. We say Moris Rishonis, a milva lahitzah nitna, a milva is meant to be spent, and therefore you can't say that there's anything that she has at the time that she's receiving that therefore should work as kedushin. Elsewhere, the Gemara tells us, by the way, there's a big argument about that between Shaul and David. David was Makadish, he wanted to be Makadish, one of Shaul's older daughter, Merav, using a milva, using the fact that Shaul owed him money for killing Goliath, and he was going to waive that in order to marry Merav, and that doesn't work. Halacha, because of Makadosh Bemilva and Makudashas, and then further on with Michal, there was a further discussion whether it's also Bemilva, whether maybe there's Milva or Pruta, whether there's also a Pruta over there, because Shaul tells him to go kill him, Plishtim, and bring him their Orlos. Anyway, the point is that this matter of Makadosh Bemilva figures in that episode in Jewish history. Anyway, the point is, though, you can't be Makadosh with an actual Milva. But here we're talking about Hanoas Milva, where earlier in the Masechta, earlier in the Perek, where we had said that you could be Makadish with Hanoas Milva, and you had a few different explanations of that, but one is that it was Hanoas Mechilas Milva, that you're saying that and that you're saying, you're saying that you owe me this money, but I'm going to be moichol of that. I'm going to be moichol that, or I'm going to be moichol that that you have longer to pay me, or whatever. That kind of thing. You could be mekadesh with that. So here we're talking about though the milva has a mashkin on it. So he has a mashkin on that. Milva. Now earlier on Daf Ches we had something about a mashkin that if you makadish a woman with a mashkin then it works. So Tosfos distinguishes there we were talking about a mashkin that was taken later on. The borrower defaulted and therefore you took a mashkin from them. Here we're talking about a mashkin that was given to begin with at the time out of the loan. So now he's saying I'm not returning the mashkin, but I'm going to be moichel on the loan. So that would work again. Midi Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, we can learn also from what Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying that would work. The Rashba explains a little bit differently. He says that it's true you can't be makadosh b'milva, but where the milva involves a mashkin, then it would work. Because in other words, you said, why do we say you can't be Makadish b'milva? Because you're not receiving anything at the time. But here, Makadish b'mashkin would mean that you're returning her the mashkin. So therefore that works. She is in fact receiving something. And that works based on Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Lav Omer Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Moser Hashonis Lav the Kedushin Nitnu. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying, according to our original understanding, that the original money that was received for her when she was sold was not given for Kedushin. And therefore, hi halvahi. So therefore, in effect, what you have over here is a loan. The father received money, and he's saying, based on this money, you have the option sometime during the next 6 years to make her your wife. Vahi gufa mashkin. She herself, in effect, is the mashkin, because that's how the odin is being paid back for the money that he laid out. And the mashaya of a shava pruta, and yet when there's a shava pruta left of her work, umiyayid, and then he does yield, have a kiddushin, then kiddushin is accomplished. Hachanami loishna. Therefore, the same thing over here would also work. That you can be makadosh b'milva sheyeshalei mashkin. So again, we're talking about that there's a mashkin that was received at the time of the halva, and now Tosfos is saying he's moichel her the milva, or the Rashba says slightly differently that he's returning her the mashkin, as the case may be. Either way, the point is it works. So the same way it would work by regular kedushin as well. So two different dinim that we can learn from what Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Okay. Now going back to yield, Tanan Rabbanan, Ketzad mitzvas yield. How is the mitzvah of yield accomplished? Oyvul habifnei shnayim. The Odin says to the Omer Hevriya in front of two people, and Pnei Yeshua points out, if you say like Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda that it's something independent of hers, then of course you need two edim for it. But even if we say Moshe Rishonis the Kedushin Nitnu, you still need two edim over here because Ein Davishim Erva Pachas Mishnayim. You always need two edim to establish a matter of Erva. It's one thing the Pnei Yeshua explains, if it was that you give her money now and you say the Kiddushin should take place, there you don't have to say anything 30 days later, but that's because he didn't say at the time there he did. He said to her to begin with, you're mekudesh to me, so 30 days later, you don't need Adim and him to say anything. Here to begin with, when he bought her as an Omer Hevriya, he never said anything about Kedushin. Therefore, when he's doing Yud, he's going to have to say. So he says, b'fnei shnayim, he says in front of two Adim, hareyat mekudeshesli. You are mekudesh to me, or hareyat meuresesli, or you are meures to me, or Hagoyes Habach also adds, you can say hareyat meuedesli, and all of that works. I feel a besof sheish, that works even if it's at the end of the 6 days, on the last day of the six years. But I feel a somach l'shkia sachama, and that would work even if he does it right before shkia. Now again, according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, you would have to have at least the prutas left of her time. And according to the Chachamim, that wouldn't necessarily be necessary. Anyway, the noyeg ba minag ishus, from then on, he treats her as a wife, He doesn't treat her anymore as a shifcha. So what does that mean? For example, the Shita Lenodilami points out, we learned in Ksubas, for example, that let's say when it comes to spinning wool or whatever typical malachas that a wife does to bring an income, there's a certain amount that she has to produce, no more than that, as opposed to a shifcha, an Amahavriya, you don't have a limit like that. So as an Amahavriya, he could have had her do as much as she's capable of producing in a day, even if it's far more than that, whereas as a wife, he can't do that. He can only have her do the regular amount that any other wife is going to make. So now Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer. So now he says, like we said before, im yesh shoros b'yom v'leilasasim a shava pruta. If there's still enough time where she could be doing a shava pruta's worth of work and mikudeshes, then she's mikudesh with that. V'im lab ena mikudeshes, and if not, then not. So in other words, again, we said before, according to the first understanding of Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, which was Rava's understanding and that of the Stamma de Gemara, then we would say it means, in other words, because he's not being Mekadesher with the money that he received, that he paid for her in the first place, he's being Mekadesher with the fact that she still has work to do, and therefore there has to be a Shavu Prota left of that. We said, according to Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok, not so. It is because Moris HaRishonis, but nevertheless, since the Pasuk says Behefta, then it's Xeris HaKosov that there has to be at least a Prota left. Well, the Braisa continues, Moshe Lo'om La'isha. You can compare it to a case where a man says to a woman, Hiskadshli Ma'achshav La'achash Shloshim Yom, be Mekudosh to me now after 30 days, meaning, in other words, that it means that it should take effect retroactively to now if he decides after 30 days that it should. And if somebody else now were to come and be Mekadosh her during those 30 days, she would remain Mekadosh to the first one, because at the end of the 30 days, he decided he wants to go through with it. And therefore, retroactively, it means that it took effect to then, because he said Me'achshav. So he did the Kiddushin first, and now there's no room for the second one for the second one's Kiddushin to be Chal. So therefore we can compare that to the case of the Omer Hevri over here. So the Gemara says Moshe Laman. Which of the Tanoim is this Moshel? Is this Moshel according to? Which Tana's opinion is it meant to illustrate? Ilema Moshel of Yosef of Yehuda. Do you mean Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda is giving it as a Moshel to explain his point? No. No, he's saying on the contrary, that the Kiddushin takes effect only now, and therefore there needs to be at least a Prota left. On the contrary, based on Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, you would have to say if somebody else were to be Mekadosher before this Aden does, then that other person's Kiddushin would take effect, because his Kiddushin only take effect at the end when he decides to go ahead with it, rather than, according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, if we say that he's not being Mekadosher with the Pruta that he originally paid for her, but rather with the Pruta of her work that's yet to come, then it means that there was no Kiddushin, there was no pending Kiddushin until now, and somebody else would be able to be Mekadosher. That would be exactly the opposite of this Moshel. So Omer of Ach Bredi Rava, Moshel Rabbanon. You're right, the Moshel was meant to illustrate the Rabbanon's opinion. So they're saying it doesn't matter whether there's a Shava Pruta left, because, in other words, in effect, when he bought her, he was saying that it doesn't matter whether there's a Shava Pruta's time of left. They say Moris HaRishonis, the Kedusha Nitnu. So therefore, it's in effect that when he paid for her 6 years ago, he was in effect saying to the father, I may eventually decide to be Mekadosh with it. If I do, then it should be Me'achshav, then it'll be retroactive to now. So you could compare that to the case where he gives her money and he says Ma'achshav Alachash Loshim. In which case the Gemara says Pshita. Well, obviously, then it's the same thing that you can derive one from the other, and that's basically the same case. So why would the Chacham have to be giving a Moshel to illustrate their position? And anyway, it seems very obvious. And the answer is Ma'od Tema Halo Omol Me'achshav. The fact is, when the Odin says Hareat Mekudeshes or whatever, he doesn't say Me'achshav. So therefore, you would think that maybe it doesn't. Maybe it takes effect only from when he decides to do it. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the Tana is telling us that no, only when he says Me'achshav will it work. So it's true. If he doesn't say, it's true. If he doesn't say. So therefore, you would think, in other words, that what if he didn't say me'achshav? In a general case where the man says to the woman, hareat mekudeshes le'achar shloshim, you would think that that kedushin takes effect retroactively, and therefore nobody else can be mekadesh or in between. Kamash malon. Therefore, the Tana is saying that no, that only if you say me'achshav does it work, and if you don't say me'achshav, then it doesn't, both by regular kedushin and by yield. So therefore, you would have to say me'achshav in order to make it work retroactively. Now that's all Rashi's explanation. Tosfos doesn't like that because you usually have when you have a mushal, it's coming to tell you an extra dimension about something that you were learning before, and then it's saying here. So the mushal ma devadoma, and then from the mushal you can derive a detail that you otherwise would have known. But over here you don't seem to be doing that. Here it seems the other way around, that you're learning from yud to the mushal. So Tosfos says like this: there's no question that if you tell an isha hareat mekudeshes the ma'achshav al'achar shloshim yom, that it, somebody else's kedushin wouldn't work in between. The same thing by yield. If somebody else comes in as mekadesher during the 6 years before the yield, then we're saying for sure it wouldn't work. Moshe Rishonis the kedushin nitnu according to the chachamim, and therefore there's no room for somebody else's kedushin to be chal. All it is if after the 6 years he decides that he doesn't want to be miyayed her, then she goes free, and it turns out that money was not given for kedushin, or in effect it would be, in other words, that as if, like he said, I'm being mekadesh al tnai, and the tnai was never fulfilled or something like that. So now we're saying the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, we're telling us that exactly that. We're learning from the Moshul precisely that point that nobody else can be Mekadeshur during those 6 years. And we're saying, isn't it obvious? And the answer is no, because the fact is, even according to the Chachamim, he didn't say Me'achshav, so maybe it should only work from the time of the Yud and on. And we're saying that no, on the contrary. So Rashi is saying he actually has to say me'achshav. Tosfos is saying that no. Once he did, to begin with, he bought her, and we know that one possibility that can result from the mechira is yud. So it says if he said me'achshav, even if he didn't actually say that. So that we're getting from the moshul, which otherwise we wouldn't have known. So it comes out, in other words, machlokas in halacha between Rashi and Tosfos, if he didn't say me'achshav. When he pays the money for this Alma Hevriya, according to Rashi, therefore it leaves room for somebody else to be Mekadesher until he decides to do yield, according to Tosfos. Okay. Tanya Idach. Now we learn another Braisa. Hamuchris Bita, a man's father sells his daughter as an Alma Hevriya, v'holach the kid shel acher, and then, having sold her, he goes and is mekadesh her to somebody else while she's still working as an Alma Hevriya. Sichik ba'odin, then he could just laugh at the other and mekudeshes l'sheni, and she's mekudesh to the second one. In other words, he can say to the Odin, you figured that maybe one day you'll have the chance to do yield with her. Ha ha, joke's on you. You can't do yield now because I already accepted kedushin for her from somebody else, and she's still under my rishus, and I have the ability to do that. You only now have her as an Oma Hevriya for the rest of the time, and then she's gonna go free, and you have no option of yield. So she's in the Kodesh to the second one. That's how Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says. The Chum say that no, if the Odin wants to be Miyayid, he could, and that would undo the other one's Kedushin. Just like we said before, like the case of a man says to a woman, you're Mekodesh to me after 30 days, where somebody else is Mekadesh during the 30 days, Mekodesh is L'sheni. Then she's Mekodesh to the second one, because the first one said the Kedushin is going to be only 30 days from now. So again, we have to ask Moshul Laman, who is this Moshul according to? Ilema L'Rabbanon, is it according to the Rabbanon? What do you mean? Amir Rabbanon im rotza l'yayid miyayid. On the contrary, the Chachamim are saying that the Odin is in the position of the first one who did Kedushin over here, and the one that the father accepted Kedushin from is in the position of the second one. So Rabbi Yosef Ibn Yehuda is saying that the second one's Kedushin al Chal. The Chachamim are saying that no, there's no room for his Kedushin to be Chal. The Odin can still do yield. So the mashal doesn't work to explain the Chachamim's opinion. The mashal is explaining Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda's opinion the same way as in that case where he didn't say me'achshav. He says, you'll be mekudesh to me 30 days from now. Well, meanwhile, during those 30 days, somebody else has the option to be mekadesh, or the same way Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda would say, during the 6 years, somebody else has the option to be mekadesh, because he didn't say me'achshav. Again, Tosfos discusses this and says that again you have the problem that the mashal was supposed to teach us something which we wouldn't have otherwise known. Here, on the contrary, the mashal just seemed to be an illustration without teaching us anything. And again, Tosfos says that that what it means is that in the regular case of kiddushin, he didn't say to her anything. He didn't say, in the case of regular kiddushin, he says after 30 days. Here, he didn't say anything about after 30 days or after 6 years or anything. Maybe it means he wants it to be me'achshav, because after all, he has the option to do yiyud anytime he wants. And no, since he didn't say me'achshav, then that means that Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying the kedushin didn't take effect. So according to the Chachamim, that's what we had the first mashal. Even though he didn't say me'achshav, it still works retroactively in the case of an odin and amar evriya, whereas according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, it's not. And according to Rashi, it's the other way around. Anyway, so then the Gemara asks again, Pshita, obviously that mashal fits exactly with what Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is saying. And the answer is again, in the case of the Odin over here, he didn't say to her anything about after 30 days. So maybe it should be different than the case in the mashal, Kamash Malan. And therefore we're saying that no, it's still, to begin with, it was done with the understanding that it could be done later on, but not Lamafreya. So again, according to Rashi, it would come out that only if he says that if he says Lamafreya, then that's one thing. But otherwise, even if he doesn't say Lamafreya, because he didn't say Lamafreya, because he just did yud later on, and Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda holds Mori Soda Shernis Lav the Kedushin Nitnu. So therefore, there's possibility for somebody else to be the Kaddisher in between. Whereas pointing to and that's illustrated by and we understand that from the Moshul. The Moshul gives us the point where you don't say Me'achshav, and therefore somebody else has the ability to be the Kaddish in between, and therefore it'd be the same thing over here. And again, you have the different understandings of Rashi and Tosfos. Of what happened. Does he actually have, because he didn't say me'achshav, or is it that because he didn't say me'achshav, therefore it doesn't take effect retroactively? So what exactly are we learning from the mashal? In the case of the Odin, he didn't say me'achshav, but he also didn't say la'achal shloshim yom, and therefore and yet Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda is saying that still what it means is that the yud takes effect only from when he says it, not earlier, and therefore there is the possibility for the father to accept kedushin on her behalf from somebody else. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tanya Idach, now we learn yet another braisa on this point about yud and about the when it works and when it doesn't. A man sells his daughter as an omhevia. He makes a deal with the Odin that you're not going to be doing yud. I'm strictly selling her to you as an Oma, but I expect to still marry her off to somebody else afterwards. Rav Meir would say that would work, and that's a valid tanai, and therefore now the Odin can't do yud. The Chum say no, that tanai is not valid. If he wants to do yud, he would still be able to do that because he's trying to make a tanai against something that it says in the Torah. If you make a tanai against what it says in the Torah, then it's no good. So the maisa is still going to be valid. The selling of her as an omer hevriya will still be valid, but the tanai will not, say the chachamim, and yud could still be accomplished. So I'm going to ask the little mayor, Tanai Kayim. So you're telling me, according to the mayor, the Tanai should work? Why doesn't a mayor agree with that concept of Masna Masha Kosova Tara? Bahatanya, Ho'imel Ishareat Mukudeshusli, Amanas Che'in Mochalai Sheik Susva'oina. A man is Makadish, a woman, and says, Amanas, that I won't have to provide you with Sheik Susan Oina. We learned back in Kedushin, in Ksubas, that ksus definitely means clothing. She'er and oina, we had two different opinions. One is that she'er meant food and oina is the regular times of having relations. And the other opinion was the other way around. She'er meant having relations and oina meant food. Whatever the case, those are the three things that a man is chayev for his wife min haTorah. But now if he makes a t'nai and he says that on condition that you want that I'm not obligated to you in she'er ksus va'oina, hareizim ha'kudeshet ha'tanoi batal divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that she's mekudeshes and the t'nai is bottle completely. Rav Yehuda, b'davar shebamamon, t'nai kayim. Whereas Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda says anything involving mamon, the t'nai would work. So therefore, yes, if he makes it a t'nai, he won't be chayev in providing her with food or clothing because that's davar shebamamon. It won't work for oina because that's not a davar shebamamon. So Tosfos points out, therefore, the Chachamim are not contradicting themselves because they could say that the t'nai to not do yield is a davar shebamamon. But Rav Meir, but Rav Meir, who holds that the t'nai is completely bottle when it comes to she'er ksus va'oina, he doesn't hold of the exception for davar shebamamon. So then, according to him, how could a t'nai not to do yield work? The answer is Amar Chizki, a shiny hacha do Amar Kro la'oma. Here it's different because the pasuk says the father sells her as an oma. Now, what does that mean? What does that word teach us? If he's selling her, obviously she's becoming an oma. It means pomim shein emoker ela la oma bovad means sometimes he's selling her only as an oma. So Rav Meir is learning from that, therefore, that there can be a case where he sells her exclusively as an oma and is saying, in other words, that the odin has no option to turn her from an oma into a wife. But Rabban and Hai la'oma mai abdile, what are the Chachamim doing with that word la'oma? And the answer is Haim and Boyle, who look at Tanya. They use it to teach us what we learn in a Braisa when it says la'oma, melamed shemoicher lepsulim. That teaches us that he's able to sell her even to somebody who's posel, for example, a mamzer or a nosin, who would not be able to do, they're not allowed to do yield with her. So therefore, he's selling them to her only as a shivcha, only as an oma ivriya. It still works. And the reason is because you can figure now you have to ask why does the pasuk need to tell us that? Shouldn't it be a kavachomer or not a kavachomer but a mamatzinu im mekadesh lepsulim loyim karen lepsulim? If he's able to be mekadesh to such a person, kedushin would be toifus with a mamzer or a nosin, even though it's also. So shouldn't it be possible to sell it to her or to sell her to them? What's the chiddush? Said, and the answer is. But on the other hand, you could answer it's not a valid kavachomer malam mekadesh lepsulim shekain odin mekadesh is bidik she naira. After all, when it comes to being mekadesh to psulim, he could do that. We find that he has stronger powers with being mekadesh because he can do it even when she's a naira, even when she's over 12. As opposed to sell her as a so therefore you kirena lapsulum shayna mocha as bita she naira, but on the other hand, you can't sell her as an omoivriya once she's a naira, because we learned before that simonim make her leave being an omoivriya, and we said a kavachomer that he certainly can't sell her once she's developed simonim. So therefore you could slog up that kavachomer, and because of that, tamad lo ma'oma, therefore the pasuk says la'oma malamet shemalam shemocher lepsulim. From that we learn that he could also sell her to somebody who's posel, because even though niyud is not going to be accomplished, nevertheless conceivably it could be, because kedushin would be toimus. Rabbi Yezer says you don't have to learn it that way. Im lalamet shemocher lepsulim, if you just want to learn the fact that he can sell her to somebody's posel, you don't need the word la'oma. Harei kvanema im ra'a be'ene adineha. The posuk starts out by saying if she's bad in her master's eyes and he doesn't do yield, implying. So, and the point is, on the one, the posuk is saying im ra'a be'ene adineha, but it continues asher lo ya'oda, that he does yield with her. Again, following the kri where the word is loy with a vav, that he is miyayed her to himself. So that would mean, in other words, so what are you saying? Is it that he can't marry her, or is it that she could? So what it means is shara'a b'nisueha, it means for her to marry him would be a bad thing. It would be osir, because after all, he's a mamzer or nosin or what have you. And the pasuk is saying that nevertheless, ashalo ya'oda, if you were to do yield, it does work because kedushin are toifus, because it's only an isur lav. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, "Ma tamad leim la'oma." So what instead do we learn from the word la'oma? Melamed shemochra lekroivim. You can learn from that he could sell her even to relatives, even where kedushin wouldn't be toifus. So now you can't learn that from Marim Ra Be'ene Adonai, because there you have Kedush and Artofus. Therefore, you need a separate pasuk for Amma to say that even that would work. Now, again, you could argue V'aloi Dinu, shouldn't it be a Kavachomer that you can learn that anyway? If you can sell her to Psulim, even though it would be a degrading thing for her to be sold to a Mamzer or Nosin or what have you. And they might even go and do yield, given that they're going to figure it's only an Isur Lav and we're allowed to. Loyim Karen Lekroivim. Shouldn't he be able to sell her to relatives where there's no degradation in that, and where they know they can't do yield because she's related to them, and then Kedushin aren't Tofus? So why does the pasuk need to tell us, says Rabbi Eliezer? And he answers back, no, because Mala Mocha L'Psulin, she Rotz L'Yayid M'Yayid. The fact is, when he sells her to apostle, conceivably he could do yield if he wanted to, because he'd be over on a lav, but nevertheless it would be chal. How could you compare that with that he'd sell her to relatives, where even if he wants to do yield, he can't? So therefore, we can shlug up the kavachomer, and because of that, oma krola oma. Because of that, the pasuk has to say the word lo oma malamich mocher lekrovim. From that, we learn that he can sell her even to krovim, and would work even though there's no possibility of yield. So Rabbi Eliezer is learning that from the word lo oma. So the mayor would say we learn from lo oma that you can make a tenai to not do yield. The Chachamim disagree, and you say you can't make such a tenai, but they're saying you could sell her in a scenario where yield should not take place because he's an apostle, or maybe even where it can't take place because he's a kohen. So the Gemara asks Rabbi Meir. Now, what is Rabbi Meir answer to that? He would say, "Psulin nafkale mehich the nafkale Rabbi Eliezer." As far as psulin, he learns from the same thing from imra'a be'ene adineha. So he learns, in other words, ra'a b'nisu'eha. We're talking about a scenario where it would be a bad nisuin, where nisuin would work, but where nisuin would work, but nevertheless, we don't want it to happen because it's an isur lav. So he would say, from that, you learn that you can sell it to psulim and bekrovim. As far as krovim, he doesn't, because he holds like the rabbanon. Damri ein mocher lekrovim, where we said the rabbanon disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and say you can't sell her to krovim precisely because then yud is not going to be possible. So the mayor holds like that and says therefore I don't need to learn that you can sell her to krovim, because as a matter of fact you can't sell her to krovim in the first place. So in other words, the vote would be, Rabbi Meir would say, you can't sell where there's no possible of yield at all, but when there is the possibility of yield, then Rabbi Meir would say you could make a tenai to block the yield because of that. So in other words, a shita lo noda l'mi distinguishes between where there's a flaw in the sale itself versus where the sale is perfectly valid, but you're just putting a tenai. So the Gemara finishes off. Tony Choda. Now we learn one brisa that says ein mocher la'aviv ve'ein mocher la'bnoi. You can sell a father can sell his daughter as an amah hevriya to his father, but not to his son. But Tani idach ein mocher loy la'aviv v'loy la'bnoi. Another brisa says you can't sell her to his father or his son. So how do we reconcile these brisas? So b'shlema ein mocher loy la'aviv v'loy la'imay v'loy la'aviv v'loy la'bnoi k'rabanan. The Braisa that says that he can't sell her to any relatives would follow the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon are saying when there's no possibility of yield, then you can't sell her. So therefore, there's no possibility of yield in either of these cases. His father, she's his granddaughter. He can't marry her. To his son, then she's his aunt. Or she's his sister. Or she's a sister, rather. And you can't marry your sister either. So that Braisa would go according to the Chacham. But if you say you can sell her to his father but not to his son, Kaman, which opinion does that follow? It doesn't seem to follow either one of them, because the Rabbanon say you can't sell her to relatives. Rabbi Eliezer says you could sell her to relatives. So who is it going to? The answer is La'ulam Kerabbanon. This Braisa, after all, could go according to the Rabbanon. The Chachamim will agree it is valid where there's a possibility of yield in some way. Given that yield can be accomplished, as we learned before, not only with the Odin, but also with his son, then you have to consider it like this. You have the Odin in the case when he sells his daughter to his father. So now there is a possibility of yield. She can't marry She can't marry the Odin himself because he's her. She can't marry the Odin himself because he's her grandfather. But she could marry the Odin's son because a different son would be her uncle, and she's allowed to marry her uncle. On the other hand, to sell her for the father to sell her to his own son, that wouldn't work. She can't marry the Odin himself because he's her brother. She can't marry the Odin's son because that's her nephew, and an aunt and a nephew are not allowed to get married. So therefore, because they're Arias. So in that case, there's no tzad yud at all. But at least if he sells her to his father, there is a tzad yud because conceivably later on, the Odin, her grandfather, could be miyayed her to one of his sons, who is her uncle, and that would be a perfectly valid marriage. So even the Chachamim would agree that such a thing is valid.